This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples. And today we're going to do a three-part podcast. We're going to take another look back now that I've looked at the replay from Boston College Florida State game. We're going to do a little bit more evaluation of what we saw in that game. We'll do two segments on that. They'll be fairly brief segments, one on the defense, one on the offense. And then I'm going to wrap up with some question and answers from answers to questions posed from the NoleDigest.com premium board. That'll be the third segment, but let's go ahead and get started on the first segment where we're going to be talking about some of the things that I saw from the defense in this first in the second viewing as I got a chance to break down what I was seeing on tape a little bit better. The first thing is at my impression live was that the defensive tackles played tremendously well, and that was even more the case in this second viewing. I felt like the defensive tackles on the second viewing, that might have been the best game from the FSU defensive tackles. I think it was the best game from the FSU defensive tackles since Timmy Jernigan and that group in 2013. And you can really see the difference in terms of the benefit that they've got, the benefits that they have from depth. You could see that they were able to stay fresher, partly because of the rotation with that third down rabbit package, where they've got Walker and Georgia Newberry, who continues to play extremely well. Again, he's been a real revelation this year. It was surprising that he played like he did, but played extremely well. But because you've got those two guys coming in on third down, they're taking those snaps. And then you've got Christmas and Mitchell coming on the field as well, playing quite a few snaps. That rotation, which effectively makes a six-man defensive tackle rotation, even though, you know, two of them are defensive ends that are on the field usually at the defensive end position, a good number of snaps as well. That means that there's a lot less wear and tear on the interior, and I think that that's going to bode well for Florida State moving forward. One of the things that happens later in the year is that defensive tackles and interior linemen start to wear down because they're not only going after each other, they're not only taking a ton of snaps and having to go to war on the interior in games, but those guys have to do that in practice. And when you have this kind of depth, you're able to take a lot of that load off in practice as well. So, you know, these guys are rotating snaps and staying fresher in practice than they would be otherwise. So that's also a big deal. Now, out of that group, it's worth noting that all of Boston College's significant runs to the interior, and they had three or four of them, all the ones that I looked at, all the ones that I broke down, Derek Mitchell was actually on the field, and on one of them he over penetrated. On another one he got basically blocked out of the play. There were a couple places where Mitchell was actually you could see a drop off between Niall Lawrence Stample and Derek Nnadi and Derek Mitchell when he was on the field, and it's pretty clear why he's not getting quite as many snaps on that. Now I think it's also evident that he's not especially healthy at this point. And I think you can see that on the tape. Now, on the other side of that, that also means DeMarcus Christmas was on the field on those plays, but Christmas flashed at different points in ways that suggests that he's going to continue to get more time. I thought Christmas played quite well, but still a little bit inconsistent. He doesn't play with the snap to snap high level that you could see from Niall Lawrence Stample and Derek Nnadi. I thought Niall Lawrence Stample played a tremendous game in this game. I thought he played exceptionally well. As I broke this down, I mean he anchored when he needed to anchor. He was able to get penetration when they asked him to do that. This was a complete game from Lawrence Stample, and Derek Nnadi also played extremely well. But those two inside in particular played exceptionally well. And Naughty's sack was extremely impressive and flashed the power that made him as highly rated coming out of high school as he was. He just ragdolled the offensive lineman there and took him right back to the quarterback. And you don't see defensive tackles that have that ability all that often. You could see the power that he has in his body. And speaking of power, I came away from the second viewing more impressed with what I saw from Josh Sweat. Wow. Boston College knew that they were going to have to find some gaps in the Florida State front. They knew that there was some size on the other side with DeMarcus Walker and Giorgio Newberry on the field, typically on opposite Josh Sweat. So they decided to go after the 240-pound true freshman, basically figuring they could test his manhood and hopefully get a matchup edge there and be able to push him around a little bit. I mean, he's not as big as some of the other guys, and obviously coming off the knee injury, and you test his physicality. And he not only held up, some of the places where I was seeing him get penetration against the run, I had to take it back a couple times and go, wow. Wow, I mean, they've got a double team here with the tackle and the tight end. In a couple cases, a tackle and a tackle lined up at tight end. And he's still not going backwards. And in some of those cases, he's splitting that and actually getting penetration without giving up his gap, without getting too deep. He's doing it prototypically. And you can see that when he actually gets a full off season to train his lower body and gets himself up into the 255 range, which is probably about where he'll play next year, once he's able to start lifting that lower body again. Wow. He's going to be special. I mean, he's already showing signs of being special, but he's going to be really, really good as of next year. There were a couple things I could nitpick about what I see from him. I would like actually to see him tighten up his stance off the line of scrimmage, particularly in pass rush situations where I think he's got his feet lined up a little too far behind his body to be able to get off the ball quite as explosively or in balance as I'd like to see. I'd like to see him a little tighter. I'm a little surprised that they haven't quite fixed that, or they haven't addressed that over the course of the year. That Brad Lawing hasn't addressed that, but I do think that he could afford to get just a little better position in his stance there to improve off the ball a little bit. But overall, there's just a lot to be encouraged about there. And as Lorenzo Featherston is on schedule to return against Wake Forest, that only adds to what Florida State can do on the edge with some of that length and pass rushing ability. I would expect to see Featherston on the field in some of those pass rush situations, either at Pugh or Sweat's position, depending on how many snaps different guys have taken and situation and all that. I think that again makes a big difference. So another thing that I continue to see in how they're approaching this defensively is that they've been playing a lot more bodies, particularly up front, than they have in recent years. I mean, they played a lot of bodies in 2013, but certainly didn't in 2014. And they didn't play a ton of depth. This is actually one of the few complaints that I have about Jimbo Fisher, who's, I've been very clear that I think he's a top 3 to 5 coach in the country. One of the few complaints that I have about Fisher at times is that I do feel like sometimes he doesn't let some of the young guys or some of the depth get as many reps as I would like to see them get. I think last year there were some times where early in the year in particular, and yes, I understand that they weren't always in position in games to necessarily want to try guys out. But I think sometimes you have to throw some of the young guys in the fire a little bit and get them ready a little bit earlier and build that depth. And they're certainly going out of their way to do more of that this year, particularly up front. The one place I'd like to see more of that overall that I'm not seeing as much of is in the secondary. I'd like to see a little bit more rotation in the secondary than what I'm seeing, particularly getting Derwin James on the field. I was told before the game in some conversations before the game in the Boston College press box and elsewhere, I was told that basically Derwin James is he's showing that he's pretty much ready to play. He's showing quite well in practice, but they're just not quite ready to put him out there a bunch. But I think it's time to give the kid a little bit more time, because frankly, he's better than Tyler Hunter. He's better than some of these other guys that are on the field at those positions. I'd like to see him get on the field when you move Nate Andrews into that money position where he is so good. And you know, again, in this game, that jumped out a few times when they were in that dime package against long yardage. The ability that he has to play that curl flat zone is, you know, he's got tremendous instincts there. I'd like to see, though, Derwin James back at one of those safety spots behind there, just in terms of what he brings to the table as a young player. I think they could get a little bit more out of that. But that's nitpicking. I think this was probably the best defensive performance that we've seen, certainly in the last year, and probably going back to maybe the 2013 Wake Forest game, actually, in terms of the best complete defensive performances that Florida State's put up in a while. And, you know, I think the second viewing only confirmed that. Now we're going to go ahead and flip to the second side of the ball. And once again, this is the Unconquered podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. And I'm your host, Jason Staples. We're going to flip to the second segment here, where we're going to talk a little bit more about the offense and a few things that stuck out on the second viewing that maybe didn't quite stick out as much when I watched it in person from the box. The first thing that was most obvious, I think, in watching it the second time is that the snaps were a bigger problem. Shotgun snaps were a bigger problem than I had seen in person. I thought Corey Martinez struggled quite a bit in this game. He struggled getting consistent snaps back to Golson, which when you've got a quarterback who's already having some issues in terms of decision making and things like that, you certainly don't want to take his eyes off the field that way. He struggled with some snaps. He struggled with reach blocks. I think there were some missed, even though after the game, Jimbo Fisher, I'd asked a question in the press conference about, you know, basically whether or not the offensive line, some of these were missed calls or what. And he said, well, no, honestly, that we're just getting beat physically. When I watched the tape, I'm not exactly sure I completely agree with that assessment. I think he wants to make sure that his guys are playing tougher. And there were some cases where they did get beat physically, but there were also a few cases where Boston College had a twist on or a stunt on up front, and the communication up front was just not very good. Guys just missed passing guys off. I mean, there's one case early in the game where it's where Golson was called for intentional grounding. Basically, it was a total jailbreak. You had four pass rushers from Boston College all come free and come loose into the backfield at once. That's not on Golson at that point. And it appeared that there were just a couple situations where the communication wasn't where it needed to be able to pick up that stunt appropriately and to be in the right position to make sure that you're cutting off the angle so those guys don't get free. And, you know, that one was one where not only did that happen from one lineman, but that happened across the entire offensive line. And this is what you're going to have once in a while when you have young offensive lines, but you know that was particularly noticeable on the interior, that with Martinez and Wilson Bell really struggled in this game. I thought actually of the offensive linemen, Wilson Bell probably had the roughest outing based on a second viewing. I don't know what the final grades were from the team itself, but my guess is that Bell's grade was the lowest up front. Either way, I think we're going to see sooner rather than later. Fisher's already been talking about rotating some guys in there. I think we're going to see sooner rather than later some changes in the starting lineup. One of the things that I actually was told in the pregame that I passed on to the Noel Digest subscribers on the premium board at the time, and you know, expressed my caveat that this is what I was told. I'm not sure what to think of it, but I was told in the pregame that the guy who's been the best at center has been Ryan Hofeld. that he's consistently been the best in practice, but the problem is that he's not healthy yet, and that he's the guy that they're really waiting on getting healthy so that they can actually be, they can be better on the interior. And, you know, my response to that was, come on, really? I mean, with what we saw last year, is that really true? I mean, Hofeld got dominated last year when he was in games. I'm talking about turnstile stuff, particularly against Notre Dame. I mean, it was bad. And you know, as poorly as Martinez played in this game, I don't think that it was quite Notre Dame last year with Hofeld on the field. But I was told, listen, Hofeld has gotten a year older and a year stronger, and you know, you're seeing that step forward, and he has put the time in and he has focused. I mean, it's not a situation where essentially I was, you know, the comparison was made to Austin Barron, and well, no, actually Austin Barron, I was told, no, Austin Barron was a guy who, you know, when he was not the starter, he stopped working. He didn't prepare like a starter, but that apparently hasn't been true of Ryan Hofeld. Apparently, he's continued to work, continued to stick with things, continued to get better, continued to improve, such that the difficulties that he had last year, he's gotten better from. And the hope is that he's actually going to come in and help stabilize the interior of the offensive line here. I'm still skeptical, given what I... because I don't have... I haven't seen it. Given what I have seen from last year, I'm skeptical. But passing on what I've heard is, you know, Hofeld has really, he has the chance of potentially really stabilizing some things up front on the inside, and that they're hoping for that as they move forward. And sure enough, early this week, Hofeld was, at least in the open parts of practice, was working with the ones, which, you know, he's done here and there as he's been recovering from injury. And Fisher was asked about it a couple weeks ago, and he said, well, you know, we're not obviously not going to take Martinez out when he's played well. Well, after this one, maybe they are going to take him out and go to Hofeld. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that change made. And like I said, Wilson Bell struggled quite a bit in this game. I think he's probably been the most disappointing member of the offensive line, in my opinion, so far, partly because I expected a lot from him coming into the year at that guard position. And he's just not quite... he's not been consistent enough, and some of the inconsistencies have really hurt at times. And I wouldn't be surprised to see, again, Chad Mavetti or Cole Minshew. Minshew still struggling coming back from that ankle injury. I wouldn't be surprised, though, to see one of those guys take over there as soon as they're healthy. Mavetti, unfortunately, he would have been the guy at the right tackle position, but he ate himself out of it in the offseason. And you know, with Mavetti there... and maybe Minshew at that right guard position, this offensive line would be really, really good. But as of right now, they're still a work in progress. And again, they're not. I don't think they're as bad as they've been as bad as some have suggested. I mean, there's been some real like major criticism of the offensive line that I've been a little bit surprised by. I mean, they've struggled, but it's been youth struggles. It's been young struggles that you kind of expect at this point. And they've been good in flashes and in spots. I mean, there were a couple cases. One of the things that I'd almost forgotten about was until I watched the replay was, you know, there were a couple big runs early on that Cook had that almost went for scores. One where he just narrowly stepped out of bounds that again, changed the complexion of the game at that point. So, you know, things are not quite as bad up front as they might seem otherwise. But there's definitely, I expect to see some changes moving forward probably by the Miami game. I wouldn't be surprised to see if we have basically Florida State make two changes, at one at the center position and one at the right guard position. And I think Kelly played a little better than Rubel when he came in, and he still was not fully healthy, and he's getting healthier. And I think Kelly will again take over that right tackle position. And, you know, I like Rubel a lot and wouldn't be surprised if he's the starting right tackle next year. But he's sort of like one of those Great Dane puppies. He just hasn't quite gotten to where he's used to being in his body to a certain point. He's like that puppy with the huge paws that's kind of not as coordinated yet. And he's getting there. And I think he's still got a high ceiling, potentially a high draft pick ceiling. But But he's just not quite there yet. And I think Derek Kelly is a little further along there. And I think moving forward, Kelly will probably be the guy at that right tackle position. So this offensive line may have as many as three starters that are different from who they had the first couple weeks, by the time we get to the Miami game. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. There are some other possibilities in terms of some changes that could be made as well. I mean, this is going back and watching the tape. It's evident that Everett Golson is just not getting it at this point. And, you know, talking to Jimbo Fisher after the game, as I said in my Instant Reactions podcast, Fisher was as frustrated as I've ever seen him with a quarterback. More frustrated than I've ever seen him with a quarterback. Fisher has always had a tendency to protect and insulate his quarterbacks and to defend his quarterbacks, you know, saying, well, you know, it's guys around him. It's, you know, it's not just him, whatever. And when I asked him about some things specifically about Golson, he was blunt. That's Everett. That's on him. That's not the way that Fisher tends to work. And that tells you that the level of frustration that he has at that position right now, and given some reports about McGuire and actually showing a little bit higher comfort level and showing some improvement the last couple of weeks in practice, I think we're going to see a good bit of Everett McGuire Sean McGuire in the Wake Forest game. And I think they may be ready to make a switch by the Miami game to Sean McGuire. That may end up being his first start of the season. If they don't make the switch before Wake Forest, Golson needs to show some major improvement in practice, needs to show that he's starting to get some of this stuff. They have no choice but to make the switch. Particularly, I mean, if he's not going to keep the ball on zone read stuff where he's responsible for holding the end and the end crashes on the back, which is what happened late in the game, then there's no reason to have him on the field, because even though McGuire is really limited, he's better right now in the passing game than Golson is. So, you know, this is a difficult thing for Fisher to get through. He's got to decide at some point whether to fish or cut bait with Everett Golson, and Golson needs to show some marked improvement over the next week leading up to the Wake Forest game, and then in the Wake Forest game if he wants to continue to be the starter at Florida State, if he wants to continue to be on the field. It's a difficult situation for Fisher. And you know, a good example of this, the big play from the end zone where Golson avoided two sacks in the end zone, two defenders in the end zone to avoid a safety, spectacular run. Even that play only had to be made because he was late on the throw. He had Whitfield in the flat right away. If he'd read that properly and been on time, nobody gets to him. He doesn't have to potentially get sacked for a safety. He just needs to throw on time, and it was basically a one-step drop. Just take the quick step, look to the flat, you've got him right there, let it go, let it fly, but he didn't. And as a result, he had to make the spectacular play that risked the safety and risked really making that game, you know, putting that game in danger and putting that game in jeopardy. And when you see some of those things over the course of the game, and one of the things that actually stuck out to me as I watched this a second time, I was critical of some play calling in my instant reactions. But as I watched a second viewing, I was far less critical. I had very little problem with any of the play calls that I saw in this game. I thought, generally speaking, Jimbo Fisher called a decent game. It wasn't his best game, but he called a decent game. But he's not getting help from Everett Golson making the right checks. He's not getting help getting the ball. You know, at some point, your quarterback has to get the ball out on time. He has to keep it on the read plays. He has to make sure that you're running it in the right direction, depending, you know, when you've got a run check on, whether you run it into the three technique or the one technique or whatnot. You've got to have some of those things from your quarterback, and it's going to make your play calls look bad, even if you have a decent call on. In some other cases where you've got some big plays running down the field, and the trigger's just not pulled. you know, at some point, those that has to change, and they're going to have to make some decisions on that before too long. All right, let's go ahead and move into the third segment of our show. And again, this is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. We're now going to take I'm going to answer some questions from that were posed from the Knoll Digest Premium Board. I'll take them one at a time and just try to rapid fire some of these things. The first question is, how can you be a fan of those lying, cheating criminals, Paul? I believe I read that right. I don't even know where to go with this. I'm just going to go ahead and move on and suggest that maybe that is serves as its own answer. The next question is 3 games into the season, disregarding if a game is home or away, what are the toughest matchups remaining for Florida State this year? That's actually a really good question. Moving forward, I think there are a few things that make a team a difficult matchup for this Florida State team. The first is you've got to have a team that can stop the run up front. Any team that can stop the run is going to give this Florida State team trouble until they start to figure things out in the passing game, and they're a long way from that at this point. So I think Louisville is still a tough game. Louisville is a tough matchup because of what they have up front on the defensive front. Clemson has been better than I expected on their defensive front, given what they've lost. I think they've done a tremendous job. Their defensive staff has done a tremendous job with those guys to make them more difficult up front. And I think Florida, because of their defense, that defense is going to keep them in games all year. We just saw it last week against a Kentucky team that just still couldn't break through because that Florida defense was too good. And, you know, that Florida game, things hold out, could be one of those 10-7 games, given the two defenses on that field and the way that the offenses have been playing. So those 3 games immediately, just because of the matchup situation, stick out to me. I don't think Florida State has as much trouble against NC State. I think they'll run right over Syracuse. I still think this defense matches up. I've said this since the preseason. I am far less worried about Georgia Tech than most, because I think this defense matches up very well with what Georgia Tech does, and I don't think Georgia Tech's defense is going to be one that's going to offer some of the same problems or issues as some of the other defenses that Florida State's going to play. Now, the one I haven't mentioned is Miami, and the timing of Miami is going to be interesting. Coming off a bye week and then against Wake Forest, they'll have had 3 weeks. So if Everett Golson continues to be the starter, he'll have had 3 weeks of essentially going through camp again to get more familiar, to get more comfortable. And then if it's not Everett Golson, if we do see a shift to Sean McGuire, then you have a totally different situation. But Miami, you know, what they showed against Nebraska is a team that can stop the run some, enough to potentially be a problem for Florida State, particularly playing at the higher level of intensity that they're bound to show against Florida State. And I think the interesting thing about Miami is that they're the first team that Florida State will have played this season. I mean, we're talking about 5 games deep into the year. That's going to be the first time Florida State plays a competent quarterback, a competent passing game. So as much as I think that the secondary at Florida State has played well so far, and I think the pass rush has generally been much improved, we still haven't really seen Florida State against a good passing attack. Florida State played a lot of good passing attacks last year. But Boston College couldn't throw the football. South Florida couldn't throw. They played a running back at quarterback. Texas State couldn't throw the football. Wake Forest won't be able to throw the football. So by the time they get to Miami, you know, that there's a lot to learn there. So I think Miami probably belongs on that list as well. And I think Miami is a real threat in this game. I think much more than a lot of people appreciate, because they do have playmakers and because they can throw the football. And as long as the Florida State offense continues to struggle scoring, that's the other issue. So, you know, I think the first issue is teams that are going to be able to stop the run are going to match up well against Florida State's offense. And then teams that can score a lot of points and potentially score a few, you know, let's say they can score 21 points on the Florida State defense. If they have a decent defense, can Florida State's offense score that many? And I think that's where the Miami game comes in. So I would say probably in order, at this point, based on what I've seen, Clemson is the most difficult game. I might put Florida at number two because of the quality of that defense and what I've seen from the offense. And then Miami and Louisville. Those are the four games that I think are the most difficult on the schedule. And again, I don't put Georgia Tech on that list. Yes, they can score a lot of points, but I think this defense matches up much better against them than they did last year and better than people realize. Okay, another question. What seems to be the root cause of problems of the problems concerning the offense? Golson, offensive line, receivers not making plays, or a combination of all? And I would say combination of all, but the biggest problem right now has been at the quarterback position. The offensive line has not played great, but the biggest problem has been at the quarterback position. There have been some serious issues that in Jimbo Fisher's offense, the quarterback is always going to have certain responsibilities in terms of making sure that the run checks are right, different things like that that can really help you. And, you know, when you're running simple, quick game stuff and you've got guys open in the flat and you don't pull the trigger, that really hurts. So I think Golson has been a big issue. I think the right side of the offensive line has been an issue. And then the receivers not making plays has been an issue, although I think it's been less of an issue because against Boston College, there were some plays to be made. Now, I do think, you know, Rudolph dropped what I would say I would classify two of what he had as drops, one on a decent throw, not a great throw. It was late, but Rudolph has to come back to it on a flag route, on a corner route where, you know, that's another 15, 20 yard play. It's a chunk play and you've got to make those plays so that receivers need to help by being more consistent and making plays when they're there. But I think it's more of a combination of everything, but quarterback is the biggest issue. And if quarterback gets fixed, offensive line is going to work itself out. Those guys are young. There's going to be some growth along the offensive line as things go on. I don't think that this is an issue where you have an offensive line like in 2011 where they're just physically inferior. Yes, they're not seniors, but they're strong. That you've got size and strength up front, so things will get put together a little better there. But I think the quarterback position has to improve dramatically, and that's where the problems will most easily get fixed. I think, you know, on the offensive line, as we see the quarterback get certain things right, the offensive line will gel a little bit better as well. Okay, moving on to the next one. We all heard about Jacquez Patrick and George Campbell during spring and during camp, but they haven't seen the field much. Why? Is it that the offense needs more reps for the current starters, or are Patrick and Campbell just not ready to be on the field yet? I'll handle them one at a time. The first issue is that Patrick he's fourth on the depth chart right now. Now he's a hugely talented back. He offers a big back option that Florida State really hasn't had that kind of big back since Greg Jones. He offers a big back option that would be really nice to have as long as he's putting things together properly. But basically, I was told straight up when I asked about this in Boston, I was told basically Patrick has to get a lot tougher. Essentially, what the way that this works is Patrick looks like Tarzan, runs like Tarzan when he's running against guys that aren't hitting him. But as soon as he gets hit by somebody more his own size, he wants to play like a 155-pound back, and he's not that. So he's still got a long way to go in that regard. And you know, they're gonna continue to work him into the practice rotation and so on. And he'll get some carries, you know, probably against Wake Forest and in a couple blowouts. But he's not ready. That's the basic answer there. They're going to expect somebody to come in and play physical. And if he's going to be a big back, he'd better do that. The other thing, by the way, is that I did hear a lot of positives about Vickers. Jonathan Vickers is consistently overlooked. I've even overlooked him at times. But the way that he's talked about by the staff and within the Florida State team, he's also a really viable player, and we'll hear more about him moving forward. I mean, he's going to be a good back in his own right. So, I mean, Patrick still has to get past him as well. As for George Campbell, the issue there has more to do with some inconsistency that he's shown in practice at this point. he's actually they're wanting to get him more time. He and Javon Harrison to get those guys more time on the field to give a big play element to the offense with some of those big receivers who can go vertical and, you know, guys with great speed. But at this point, he's been a little too inconsistent with some routes, and he's dropped too many balls. He dropped too many balls in the week leading up to Boston College to really trust him. And what they know right now is what they're trying to go for right now is they know that Golson's not that consistent. He's not consistent at all. That Golson's struggling. So they've got to surround him with as much consistency as they can. That's why the older guys are playing right now, is because those guys know where to be. And presumably they're going to catch the ball. Although, you know, Bobo's had a couple drops and Rudolph has had a couple drops. And if those continue, then you will see the younger guys more often. But as of right now, the basic idea is it's not like they're exploding for a bunch of plays in the passing game anyway. What they need is guys that are consistently going to do their job and block and be in the right place. And so, you know, the moving to some of the younger talent isn't as critical at this point as it would be otherwise. I think we'll see more George Campbell earlier than Jacquez Patrick, because Campbell physically and, you know, mentally and all of this is more ready. Patrick is ready physically, but he's just soft right now. And until he toughens up a little bit and gets ready to play in that regard, he's not going to see the field for meaningful minutes. Campbell, on the other hand, he's going to see some time sooner rather than later. It's just a matter of earning trust enough to be out there. Let's move on to the next question. The next question is Golson securely handling the football being addressed? It's easy to see how he fumbled a lot on the run at Notre Dame when you see the way he carried the ball scrambling out of the end zone at Boston College. Answer to that is a short answer: yes, they're constantly trying to address that sort of thing. These are fundamental issues, but at some point you can't coach certain things out of guys. And again, these are some of the reasons why Golson right now he's got a very, very short leash. Let's just put it that way. Move on to the next question. When can we expect Derwin James to be on the field at safety regularly? I answered a little bit of that in the first segment, but basically short answer is I've been told that Derwin has looked basically ready to go, but they want to go with some of the vets at this point with Hunter and some of these other guys in the secondary because of the experience factor. But I do think we're going to see an increasing role for Derwin as the year goes on. And again, one of the places that we start to see that, I think we'll start to see more of Derwin in the second half against Wake Forest, provided they're able to get any sort of lead and get comfortable enough to start rotating guys in the secondary. So I do think we'll see Derwin James on the field sooner rather than later. There's some internal questions right now about, you know, why isn't three playing a little bit more? So I think, you know, the short answer is I'm not exactly sure, but we should see it sooner rather than later. And the final question is, can Jimbo please throw a running back screen? Tunnel screens do not count. Well, I'm sure Jimbo's capable of it, but, He's actually not at quarterback, so I don't know that we'll see that anytime soon. But in all seriousness, it depends on the defense and depends on, you know, whether or not they're bringing run blitzes, whether or not they're bringing pass blitzes and so on, because different screens are designed to go against different kinds of defenses. Obviously against Boston College, it seemed like that would be the kind of situation you might want a running back screen. But because they weren't bringing a lot of linebackers, because they weren't bringing that kind of pressure, they were just basically doing a lot of stunting and run fits and that sort of thing, it was not really the ideal situation for a running back screen. I think we'll see that those running back screens probably more likely against a Miami, or in particular, I think we'll see it against Louisville because of the type of defense that Grantham runs, where you're going to see a little bit more linebacker fire and that sort of thing in those contexts. One thing I'm generally not going to question Jimbo Fisher's play calling on is his timing on screens. I will question how they coach the tunnel screen, which seems to be ineffective more often than not at Florida State. But in terms of his timing, calling running back screens in particular, he's shown that to be impeccable over the last few years, and is, you know, just always seems to have a knack for when to call it against what defenses. So I don't know that there's a whole lot to complain about there at this point. I do think that if there could be any play calling complaints that I would have about the Boston College game, it's that they didn't use more more sort of wildcat motion kind of stuff, or, you know, basically jet sweep motion, and jet sweeps and end arounds and that sort of thing to get guys like Kermit Whitfield on the edge while potentially opening some stuff up for Cook a little bit more, off the tackle or inside the tackles. I do think that they could have done a couple more jet sweep type things, or just end arounds to a guy like Whitfield to try to play with that edge a little bit more. And I think that's the one thing, the one complaint after watching the replay that I would still have. But I don't think the screen thing is that big of a concern. Well, in any case, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Doc Staples. You can follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And, of course, make sure to catch our next podcast, which during the bye week is going to cover a few things a little bit, again, more in general. And then we'll probably take a little bit more of a look around the nation in our next podcast and do some analysis of what changes we've seen so far this year as well. And then in our second podcast next week, we're going to look a little bit more at some advanced stats and some metrics and help people get a little bit more accustomed to the things that you're used to seeing, that you're starting to see more in the media. In any case, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening.
I made this.